Welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster, and we have another amazing edition of the Voices of Courage show today. Today, we're going to be talking about how you can take your nonprofit. This show is really developed for individuals that have nonprofits or you're thinking about starting your nonprofit. Boy, this is the show you need to hear before you start things. But we're going to be talking about how to sustain nonprofits with financial sustainability, I would say. You know, what's working in that area, what's not working in that area for nonprofits. You know, what government funding is going to give you or not give you around your nonprofit. You know, your staffing, your retention in your business. By the way, this you know, here's the good news. You know, a lot of times people think we're going to talk about nonprofits, so I'm going to turn this off because I have a business. Well, if you have a business, we're going to be talking about business principles to be able to run your business and your nonprofit. And if you're missing any of these pieces, I can pretty much guarantee it's going to hurt you tremendously until you get these pieces in place. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about leadership, governance. We're going to be talking about technology in the nonprofit world. Things that I think will really benefit you, collaboration, competition in your world. How do you do all this, right? Is there systems? Is there a book out there that you could just learn so you could just accelerate your this process in creating your business? Well, the good news is there is. My guest that I'm going to introduce just a second after we take this break is an expert in this space, and he's going to give you information I guarantee you've never heard before. So here we go. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with my very special guest.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. Today, we are calling this show The Courage to Transform Your Nonprofit. I have a very special guest, as I mentioned, Donald Summers. Donald, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
For those of you that don't know Donald, he is the renowned social impact advisor and the visionary founder and CEO of Altruist Partners. His firm has been instrumental in transforming hundreds of mission-driven organizations across the globe, tracking the biggest strategic, fundraising, and organizational challenges to impact their enhance their impact. Whoa, excuse me. All right, so Donald, let's get into it. How'd you get into this space?
I grew up really suspicious of business principles and practices. I grew up very idealistic. I studied literature. I was in teaching. And I was really suspicious, like so many people in the social sector, of business practices that are extractive. They oppress people and they hurt the planet. And it wasn't until I got to graduate school and discovered finance and resource management and business strategy that I said, this is how the world works. What if we could use these tools for good? And that kicked off my career in nonprofit organizational development, where you take all the best principles and practices from the business world and you merge them with missions that make the world a better place. it's finance capitalism that's not immoral, it's amoral. We can use these tools for good. And Ken, the last 25 years have been incredible. We've learned so much, and I'm delighted to share with you and your audience today.
Well, I love that. And, you know, I have a question for you. There are a lot of nonprofits out there that think that, let's say, 90% of their funds need to go directly to those that they are supporting, which would leave about 10% to run the business. Does that model work?
No, and it's called the overhead myth, and it's one of many destructive myths that keep nonprofits from fulfilling their true potential. I use a broader term. I call it the myth of uniqueness. Nonprofits think they are not a business. They think that they're not like other nonprofits. Everyone's a special, you know, flower. The truth is that most of the practices taught in the MBA programs apply and apply very, very well. The only real differences are legal and tax related. The funding that comes into the nonprofit space is more diverse. You can get contributed revenue as well as earned and invested. But let's be clear, you're running a railroad. Management, team building, HR, technology, change management, governance, fostering safe culture of psychological safety, good leadership. All these things apply perfectly. Yet because people are under the illusion that they've got a C3 designation, they think they're different. And the big problem is all the taint, the historical negativity associated with business practices. Ken, that's a big barrier. People think, oh, MBAs don't apply. And the fact is they do, with some subtle subtle differences that we can unpack.
Well, you know, I think it's public education, too. I think that, you know, as a contributor to nonprofits, you know, one of the things that I first look at is how much money goes to those that they're actually helping. And I think we need to flip that model a little bit because, you know, they may be giving, you know, 70, 80, 90% to those they help, but they may not be a business in 2 years.
If they can't pay their staff competitive wages, right? We say, you know, it's kind of a morbid joke. If you have martyrdom in your compensation policies, that, you know, that's not going to happen, right? As they say in the, you know, say in the South, that dog won't hunt. Right. You got to pay your people well. You've got to invest in infrastructure. So looking at these simplistic ratios, again, that's not going to get you very far. Obviously, there's some some nonprofits that are actual very, very tiny number that are actually boiler room scams. And they, you know, American Firefighters for Children with Cancer, and they're just fundraising shops that give out a tiny percentage and then pay their staff. You know, so you can't think in black and white. You have to look at the total impact. You have to look at the financials. You have to get to know the organization. You can't rely. You've got to put organizations through what investors call due diligence. And, you know, the charity navigators and all those well-meaning organizations out there, they're not going to do it for you. Right? You have to get to know the organization. You have to understand how they're measuring. Are they transparent? Are they accountable? Are they growing their impact every year? What's their goal?
Yeah.
And it's tricky business. You know, so there's no easy answers, and you certainly don't want to rely on simplistic, oh, they're, you know, there's no like one measure you can look at.
Well, you know, I think of just even the word nonprofit that you know, I think some people think, well, I'm not supposed to make a profit. I mean, you know, I'm supposed to give everything I have back to society. If people gave me money, I should just give it away. You know, I mean, what?
Amen to that. Saying,
right.
Well, you know, it's the religious. Now, here's the other thing. Half the nonprofits in the United States are churches. So you have this religious inheritance, and you know, whether you look at Buddhism or Hinduism or Christianity or Judaism, we have this religious inheritance of altruism that says money's bad. You know, money and, you know, you can't get a camel easier for a rich man to what's a camel, the needle, and the rich man. You know that one.
Money's the root of all evil. And
yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so, and the people that attracts people in the space that want to engage in these lofty ideas and think the business side's icky. But the truth is, you're not going to be able to scale up what you do and help people unless you're really smart about the business side and the evaluation and the governance and the technology and the HR, not just the lofty programmatic ideals that you have. You have to really be technically savvy. You have to be disciplined. And it's not just about the money. It's about the biggest problem in the nonprofit space is execution and evaluation. So when I wrote my book, I tried to provide leaders everything they need all in one place because it is confusing. Yeah. There's so many different domains you have to be good at, and all the different practices and principles are all over the place. And I think what I've been able to do, I believe in it's the first attempt at this, and I'm getting good feedback so far. I'll leave it to your audience to judge. But everything's in one place in a step-by-step process. So you're running an organization that can succeed, not just survive. And but we don't even write nonprofits. Yeah, there's social impact enterprises.
I love it. For my listening audience, we're putting that book on the screen right now. It's called Scaling Altruism, and it's by Donald Summers. So you may want to check that out on Amazon or other places that books, great books are sold. All right, Donald, listen, this is good. We answered that first question. So, you know, if you have a nonprofit or if you have some, know somebody has a nonprofit, it doesn't really matter where you are in the business right now. You're going to learn from Donald right now in this segment. Donald, what's the biggest challenges nonprofits are facing today?
Well, if you look at, according to the National Council of Nonprofits, a tremendous organization, 93% of nonprofits, over a million of them, are under $1 million a year. So revenue's the big concern. And it's Giving Tuesday. So nonprofits are socialized to pursue small dollar donations. They write grants. They run auctions. They ask people for money. They send out spam all in one day. These are strategies that might keep you alive, but they certainly aren't going to sustain you over the long term, and they're certainly not going to grow you.
No, and it creates donor stress, if you ask me. I mean, it's like you're putting pressure on your donors. It's today's the day to give. It's like, really? Yeah. And
the truth is every day is. And we say, don't give, invest.
Invest.
Right?
Right.
Invest. Expect results. Ask the nonprofit, do you have clear evidence-based outcomes that are significant against the size of the problem you're addressing? Are you growing your impact every year? Those two questions will sort out the players from the pretenders, the social impact performers versus the feel-good tourists, right?
Yeah.
So if you want a nonprofit that's going to solve problems, not nibble around the edges, they're going to have independent evidence that is numerical, right? You can measure it. If they say it's too hard to measure, they're not doing the thinking. And are they growing their impact every year? Is this an organization on the rise, or are they doing this, or declining, or flat? Those two indicators will generally separate the small top 5 to 10% of nonprofits from the rest. And for the rest of the nonprofits, they have to have, they have to confront the brutal reality.
Wow.
That their well-meaning altruism, which we love, and I admire every nonprofit staff person and founder, and I love all of these people. I've dedicated my life to helping them. I'm certainly not disparaging these folks, but they need to go to school. They need to get out of the illusion that they're running something other than a business. They need to learn how to run a railroad. How to do it is out there. They need to get people on their board of trustees that have built companies before. directors of nonprofits should stop confusing their opinion with actual knowledge and how to build a company and how to raise money and how to deliver social impact, right? People are making stuff up. So the facts are out there. What I'm trying to do is kick off a movement of people who are truly disciplined, who are truly rigorous in their application of organizational management principles. And the bottom line is, Ken, there's no such thing as for-profit or non-profit. These groups of people working together to try and accomplish a difficult task. And the principles...
I love that. I love that. And I think that, from my point of view, there's a lot of people doing really wonderful work in the non-profit field. And they just haven't figured out the pieces we're talking about right now. Because, what they're doing is, making social impact and changing things in a lot of different areas. But if you can't be in business, if you can't stay there and you don't have a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year plan, you're going down the wrong path and you're probably going to fail. That's what we're talking about here. All right, listen, I got to take
another easy marker.
Well, wait a second. I got to take a break. What's the easy marker?
You go ahead.
Yeah, we'll come back on the easy marker. And
there's another easy indicator of how to tell a healthy nonprofit from one that's not so healthy. We'll talk about it after the break.
Awesome. Okay, we'll be right back.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws, and we'll fight really hard to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call, so please call right now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Ken D. Foster. I'm talking with Donald Summers. He is a renowned social impact advisor. And Donald, okay, go ahead. You finish your thought there.
Well, when you're looking to support nonprofits, and you mentioned that the overhead ratio, which for many years funders followed, what's the percentage of programs versus, don't look at that. We mentioned our evidence-based practices. We mentioned growing your impact. Here's another marker. It's months of cash of financial reserves. Is the organization, do they have a piggy bank? Are they financially well-managed? We advise that nonprofits must have, this is a gotta-have, not a nice-to-have, at least 6 months of liquid revenue, cash in the bank. So at least half your annual budget you should have in reserve. If you have less than that, you're in what's known as the zone of insolvency. You're risking, if there's a financial shock, if you don't get a grant, if funding declines, if your expenses increase, you're going to go out of business or you're at risk of going out of business. And so many nonprofits are living this hand-to-mouth existence. They can't pay their staff. They don't have the revenue engine figured out, and they think it's okay to just have it'll look bad if we're holding on to too much money. Well, that's not how it works. So it's another one of the myths in the space where you shouldn't have too much money because it looks like you're not helping the people you should be helping. Ooh.
All right. Well, listen. Okay. I think they're getting this. I really do. And what I want to give the audience right now is in your book, you have some immediate strategies that people can start shifting this around. So let's talk about that a little bit, and we'll put the book back up on the screen so people can see. Go ahead.
Well, what we do is provide a sequence. Do things in order. So many people running nonprofits play whack-a-mole. They're working on revenue. They're working on evaluation. They're working on governance. And they're doing things out of order. So what the book provides is a 7-step sequence. First, assess. Understand what capabilities and assets you need. 2, align. Get your board and your staff aligned around a vision and an overall goal. 3, write a world-class investment-grade business plan with specific areas. There's a complete template with 15 different sections that you must have in an investment-grade business plan that a sophisticated investor will look at and go, oh, okay, I can see this. This is credible. Then you have to test that plan and adjust it, align it with stakeholders. Then you have to finance it. You have to fund it, earned, contributed, and invested revenue. Then you have to execute, which is the hard part. So you've assessed, you've aligned, you've planned, you've funded, you've tested. Then you execute. You have to understand your KPIs, your key performance indicators, and you have to build an executive dashboard. And finally, the 7th and final chapter is on leadership. What you need to know as a board member, what the organizational swim lanes are, and there's a certain set of practices in there that help foster teamwork and collaboration, like psychological safety. So the book ties it all together. And, you know, for years, I've read these management books that say what to do and not how to do it. And I found them frustrating. And I've spent decades making mistakes and failing. Yes, we've got a great track record, but we earned it the hard way. And we're trying to provide a shortcut for people to say, here's not just what to do. Right. Here's how to do it. Here's an example. Here's a template. And finally, here's a community. The book is supplemented by an online learning community that's applying the practices. So we've already recruited our first cohort of nonprofits who pay the lofty sum of $79 a month, right, to apply this intellectual property, this core IP that we've built. So we're basically giving it away and trying to democratize access to these are proven practices. And I'll close with something that people may not believe, but it's true. Nonprofits who follow this methodology and apply it with fidelity experience year-over-year increases, a median increase of 25% in their revenue and their social impact every year. So whether you're struggling, whether you're flat, whether you're going back and forth, if you want to be on a sustained growth trajectory, living your best life, living that life of courage that you bring together, right? Mm-hmm. This is the recipe for doing that. And any nonprofit program, any social change agenda can fit into this. It's not easy. It takes months to do it, but it works. And for those with the grit and the courage, it's pretty much free.
I love it. Well, we're putting on the screen your site there, altruistaccelerator.org. Is that the one that they can go and find that $79?
That's the description, okay. Right? And it has an FAQ. It's a one-page description of what the accelerator is. And then there's a link to join.
Okay.
There's an actual community is based in a community learning software called Circle. And we have each of the book's chapters and practices is presented again. There's video by yours truly. There's a much richer selection of tools and templates. We have business plan templates. We have examples. We have dashboards. We have job descriptions. I mean, everything is on there. It's an entire back end. So you can drop in your nonprofit programs. And if you do it, you have to do everything, not just some things. You can't confuse your opinion with knowledge. It's very prescriptive. That's the tough part. But it's also very flexible and it's very supportive. So if for the leaders that are ready to do it, it's working so far. And I'm going to spend the rest of my career trying to democratize access to this. So this is all the stuff they teach at Harvard Business School. And it's all the stuff you learn in Silicon Valley, and all these high growth companies follow it. It's never really been translated for the social sector before, and now it is.
And you're the one pioneering it. I love it. I love that you're here working with us on this. Listen, I'm going to take another break. When we come back, in the book, you include investment and partnership scoreboards. And I think that's really important. So we'll be right back. We're going to talk about that when we get back.
Hi, everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich, here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So, Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. I'm talking with Donald Summers. We're talking about the nonprofit industry. We're actually really addressing all businesses with this. I just love this conversation, Donald. You know, before I get to the partnership investment scoreboard, I just want to touch a little bit more. You know, last year I rode a 700-mile bike ride in 7 days from San Francisco down to San Diego. And I did it with a nonprofit called the Challenge Athlete Foundation. And at that event, we raised $3.6 million in that event, right? Now, the reason I bring that up is because I think a lot of nonprofits depend only on, fundraising, small fundraising. They don't have this vision where they can really create an impact and raise large amounts of money. Do you address that in your book? And if so, how?
Oh, yeah.
What do you say there? Yeah.
Well, Ken, let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard back from that nonprofit after you did that bike ride?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Constantly hearing back from them. Yeah. Every week, couple emails telling about what's happening, next bike rides they're doing. They're very proactive. Yeah.
So event-based revenue is, you can do it, but it's very hard to scale. So events, raising money at events should be the first, it's an acquisition strategy. You should use events to educate the public about your mission, to create a sense of community around your mission, to have fun, to celebrate. The fundraising should be secondary, because if you're leaning on just the events to raise money for your organization, it's a transactional strategy, not a transformational, a relationship-based strategy. Events don't scale. You don't see hospitals and universities and major cultural organizations running their organizations on events. So it's one step. It's a tactic. And you have to have follow-on strategies to communicate and deepen the relationship with people who come to the event, right? So it's more of glue. Now, the problem is too many nonprofits rely on just these auctions or galas or walkathons to fund them. They have a very high cost. We call cost per dollar. They often are 30, 40, 50, 60 cents per dollar, and they don't scale. True revenue strategies that are scalable and they're a lower cost per dollar. So you can raise money philanthropically at a cost per dollar at 10 or 15 cents. So bigger margins, and you can be doing things like trusts and estates and what are known as major gifts. We don't like that term, but it's a thing. Nonprofits can be raising this nonprofit, your bike racing, organization can be raising $2 to $3 to $4 million checks from individuals. They could be generating that through consulting. Maybe they have a for-profit subsidiary. Maybe they have a licensing campaign. They have unmonetized intellectual property. They could be doing impact investing. So here's the challenge, and I unpack this in the book. Earned, contributed, and invested revenue comes from individuals, foundations, corporations, government agencies, and impact investors. And there's subcategories, and they all require different strategies. And it depends on how you match. You got to match the funding method to your mission. And most folks don't know this stuff. So, oh, we got a nonprofit. Let's do a gala, do an auction. Let's do Giving Tuesday. They do the same thing everybody else does, and it doesn't work. It'll keep you alive, but it won't allow you to pay your top people, and it sure as heck won't allow you to scale.
Yeah. And just to your point, that particular organization has decided not to do this once a year large event anymore because
of the work,
because of the exactly what you just said, because of the expense ratio on that, the expense profit ratio. It was very, very high. And so they went to some other models. So that's to exactly what you're saying. Even though this company's been around 15 years, they've been doing a lot of good things. You know, it's, you got to still follow the principles that we're talking about here. It doesn't really matter who you are, how long you've been around.
And if they're truly savvy and if they follow the practices in my book, they'll say, hey, Ken, thanks for coming to the bike ride. Could you give us some advice on our business plan? We're setting a new aggressive goal. We'd love your feedback on this.
100%.
And they'd have personal contact from a relationship officer because very likely, Ken, you would path a wealth screen as a high net worth individual. I'm guessing that you have at least six-figure investment capacity in a nonprofit if you fell in love with it.
Right.
If you got to trust that nonprofit and you really got to know the leadership, you'd go from writing four-figure checks to five- and six-figure checks.
Yeah.
You have to have a relationship development strategy. You have to have an investment and partnership strategy. You can't just do these one-off, you know, one-and-dones.
Yeah.
And it's a much more sophisticated process that I describe in a step-by-step way.
And that's interesting. I mean, even myself, I have, you know, I invest in about four nonprofits, I think. And, you know, everybody hits me for nonprofit, but, you know, these align with my values. They align with what I believe in. They align with, in this case, my sports activities. You know, they align with me. And, you know, so it's and they consistently drip on me, but not in a, you got to do this sale now. You got to contribute now. It's not about that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't subscribe to that. And in fact, I unsubscribe to that. If one of these started to go that way, I would unsubscribe because it's just not what I want to see. I think a lot of people are like me.
Ken, only, you know, in the last decade, the number of people making contributions to nonprofits in the United States has fallen by half.
Oh, why is that?
Well, there's a book called The Generosity Crisis that explores this. I have my suspicions, and I know the field well. First of all, information overload has led to donor fatigue. I really blame Giving Tuesday for this. It's a well-meaning effort to try to get people to contribute more, But what it does, spamming everybody just leads to overload and anxiety. I can't help all these organizations. There's also been a real, there's a number of other factors behind it. But, you know, I don't really, it's so much healthier to talk about what works than what the problem is. So when nonprofit leaders and boards make a commitment to have evidence-based practices that there's truly, there's no adjectives. They can say, here's the problem we're solving. Here's our solution. Here's evidence that it works. You know, here's how we compare to other organizations. Here's an ambitious goal. Here's our progress. And they tell you their problems and their challenges, not just what's going well. And you have a really honest, robust dialogue. And they take the time to get their know their supporters and communicate well. Those are the nonprofits that really succeed. And those are the ones that are growing. And I'm glad to say there's a small number of very, very successful, high growth, high performance nonprofits that are making the world a better place. And so, you know, we want to talk about those successful models and let other people know that, you know, you don't have to live a hand to mouth. You don't have to be on the hamster wheel struggling to stay alive. There's models and practices that truly, truly work that make the world a better place. And I have some incredible examples. I share one in the book, but we've got dozens that we've worked with, and we want to go from dozens of these to hundreds and then thousands and then 10,000. Ken, imagine this. I'll stop. Imagine if we could get every small nonprofit the recipe for success and they followed it. We would unleash a tsunami of positive social impact that would change this country in a generation. If we can get these tools out there. I know. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, that's what we're doing here today. That's why I'm having you on my show. Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. And, you know, and I have my suspicions also around why giving has gone down. And it has to do with credibility. It has to do with results. You know, you got organizations out there, you know, I don't know if I want to name them maybe, but they're organizations that have been out there for many, many decades. And they, instead of solving the problem keeps increasing, especially in the health areas. Problems keep increasing. So they're not solving anything. They've turned into these money-making organizations that are self-supporting. And I think people know that. People aren't stupid. And they're done supporting these kind of organizations. But here's my point. There's a lot, like Donald just said, there's a lot of really good organizations out there. And I think we owe it to ourselves. You know, service is a big value of mine. And, you know, it's kind of a selfish value because I know the more I give, the more I receive. I mean, it really is that way. When you step up and you're in service, like Donald is right now, giving it away and helping nonprofits, and you know, people just automatically are attracted to that charismatic piece that's in us, and they want to give, and they want to give more. They want to be with you. So there's it's a little self-centered, but at the same time, that's what we need in this country. We need people right now, my audience, to go and say, listen, I'm going to find three amazing nonprofits that meet your values, that meet the criteria that Donald has just put out here, and start to contribute at whatever level you can. That's how we change this world. I really believe that.
Getting in and getting to know a nonprofit is a hands-on exercise. It doesn't happen through email or social media. You gotta meet people where they are. You got to get to know them. And you'll go in there, and by volunteering with an organization, you'll know right away how well they're run. And find an organization that you believe in that captures your time, treasure, and talent effectively, and stay with them. Stick with them. That's what we need. We need a renaissance of that type of involvement in this country, and we can make it happen, Ken. So thank you for your leadership on that front.
Well, we can. And listen, you know, I'm laughing here because it's the same principles that Warren Buffett does when he invests in a company. He looks at who they are, what their financials are. Do they align with values? Are they growing or shrinking? Are they, you know, and then he gets to know them. He sends people in to understand the companies themselves. It's the same thing. You're talking the same thing.
It's the investment pool. I've learned so much of my work by reading VC blogs and talking with investors. I was a fundraiser for many years, and I spent a lot of time with sophisticated, very wealthy people who didn't want to waste their money, and they asked hard questions. And I learned out that that process is called due diligence. So when any investor gets involved with a company, they do their homework. They study the company, and there's a specific set of things that you look for. And you mentioned the big ones. And the same thing is the case in the social sector. Unfortunately, you have a lot of people that either don't believe that or don't want to believe it. And that's okay. We're not here to put them down. But there's a lot of perverse incentives in the social sector. There's a lot of people that just want the look and feel of impact. They don't really want to do the work. There's a lot of funders that want to give out $5,000 at a time instead of doing the hard work and digging in deep. So, you know, but that's true in every space. But again, we're here to celebrate the positives, and we're here to call out the organizations that are doing amazing work.
Yeah.
And there's a growing number of them, and we're pleased to be a part of it.
Yeah. 100%. Listen, you know, all of us have intuition, you know, I mean, you know, the intuition is important, whether you're investing in business, you're investing in the private sector, the nonprofit sector, and you have to tune in, right? I mean, there are people out there that, you know, that the challenge with cons is that they believe their own stuff, right? So that's what makes them dangerous, because they really believe it and they put it out to you, whether they believe it because they've rationalized it, whatever they're doing or not. But we all have intuition. We all can pick amazing nonprofits and follow the formulas that Donald just gave you to invest in them. I want to ask you, because I'm doing my own investigation with you right now, right? So tell me, give me some success stories your organization has created in the nonprofit space.
Well, one of the most exciting is documented in the book, where Treehouse, an organization that serves foster youth, for years was handing them material support, backpacks, holiday gifts, and so forth. They tried to actually, the founder, Janice Avery, is a social worker, and she said, material supports are not enough. These kids only graduate high school at 40% rates. Their peers, everyone else who had the good fortune to be born with parents, graduated 80%. They tried for years and they spent millions of dollars to increase graduation rates among foster youth and failed. And as a last ditch effort, they hired a maverick startup consulting firm, Altruist Partners, to come in and say, how can we actually try something different? So the book describes how we went through the series of planning, finance, and execution. And in 5 years, they went from serving 250 kids to 2,500. They served every child, every foster child in King County, the home of Seattle, and increased graduation rates from 40% to over 80%. Then the state, then the model went statewide. And now finally, years later, this was back in 2012, we started this work, the model's going national. We know and here's the message. We know exactly how to serve vulnerable youth. These are children with what's known as high adverse childhood experiences. They've had divorce. They've witnessed a murder. They've been abused. They've seen violence. They have an incarcerated parent. And it's not just foster youth, but there's millions of children that are impacted by poverty in the United States every year. And it traumatizes them physically. We know exactly how to solve that problem. We're working with Penfield Children's Center right now in Milwaukee that has a therapeutic model that can solve the damage done by poverty, and it's mental and physical damage that poverty, that stress does. So just like we've scaled up a solution for foster youth, we're at work now working on scaling up a therapeutic program for millions of low-income children that can take this therapy, and it changes their life trajectory. So those are two examples of dozens and dozens that we're working on and some of the we're most excited about. And what does it mean? It means writing a business plan, getting very clear in the evaluation model. It means raising millions of dollars. It means recruiting entrepreneurs for the board. It means paying staff competitive salaries with the for-profit space, not just other nonprofits. It means executing, paying attention to your key performance indicators. It means change management. It means psychological safety. It means using a tech platform. It means strategy. It means testing. It means grit, optimism, courage, focus, discipline. But those are from the book, Story About Foster Youth, that gave me true belief that with the right practices, we can solve any social problem at scale. And, you know, thank God for Janice Avery. Treehouse is now a $25 million a year organization that's influential nationally. And we're about to reproduce that type of success with Penfield Children's Center in Milwaukee to serve all traumatized low-income children. And that's just the human services space. Ken, I can go on at length about what we're doing in sustainability.
I love it. It's amazing. Well, listen, I can't go on anymore. We're out of time. But the book is Scaling Altruism. By Donald Summers. You can get it on Amazon or anywhere books are sold. Final thoughts on this from you.
I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic we can come together. There's a lot of pessimism in the space right now. There's a lot of research that social media is polarizing the country. I'm optimistic, Ken. You know, just being on this show today, we know how to solve social problems. We've got a startup now that we're working with the United States. Here's what I'm most optimistic about: the United States Chamber connection. You've heard it here first. The United States Chamber of Connection. It's one of the nonprofits in my accelerator. It's about to go national and bring us together, depolarize the country, build community, take people from strangers to friends. That's the type of stuff that we need in this country. And I'm really optimistic.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. So stay in the green room as we close the show. And, you know, one of the things I want to say while you're still here is that, you know, that polarization. Listen, I don't know about you out there, my audience, but I am not red. I am not blue. I'm not black. I'm not green. I'm not whatever color, you know, white. You know, I'm a soul. That's who I am. And we have to start looking at others as an individual, you know, there's something greater that lives within all of us than just the color of our skin or the political party or our culture or our religion. There's something much greater than that. And when we start to connect from that level, we can change anything.
Get into that, brother.
Thank you so much, all of you, for listening to the show today. And I hope you will do one thing today. That's just pass this show on so others can start to see the unseeable and know the unknowable and do the impossible just like you. Take care.